Welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Monday, March 10th, 2025. I am Carl James, joined by Chris Feeney, Zach Horwitz, and Cassidy Palmer. The Hoosiers went 1-3 on the week. They lost a midweek slugfest to Northern Kentucky at the BART, then dropped 2 out of 3 to Penn State, opening league play in Happy Valley. This brings the Hoosiers to 7-9 overall and 1-2 in the Big Ten standings. The position player group are hitting a ton, but executions on the field, numerous base running mistakes, inconsistent pitching, and leaving guys on base have led to losing several games they just shouldn't have lost. They are now 7-9 with a positive 37 run differential. So we get to talk about this now, so we're just going to get right into the meat of this. And from what I understand, Zach came prepared, so we are throwing it to Zach to get us going. Zach, what do you got?
So if you go back a year ago, the first question I ever asked Jeff Mercer in the press conference was something about pitching, and he mentioned 6 runs or less from the pitching staff. And I asked him again this year if that's still around, and the answer to that was yes. So Indiana stands 7-9 overall. 5 of those 9 losses, they've scored 6 or more runs. So if you go through it, the first Xavier game, they scored 6 and lost. UNLV, they scored 12 and lost. And then this week, 3 of those. Northern Kentucky, during the midweek, they scored 11 runs and lost the game. Friday at Penn State, they scored 9. And Sunday, they scored 6. So if you can't win with those results, there has to be an issue at hand, of course. So you look at what could be the problem, and I can tell you it is not the rotation. So they found Ben Grable and Cole Gilley in addition to Gavin Siebold. He's been on the mound. Siebold and Gilley have been on the mound every weekend. Ben Grable's pitched 5 innings in his last 2 starts, 5 innings each, and he allowed 3 hits in both of those games, 0 runs in the Stetson game, and only 1 run in the Penn State game. Then you go over to Cole Gilley. He pitched 5.1 innings, 5 innings, 3 innings, and 4.1. So I think from Gilley, you really need him to get deeper into games. The strikeout numbers are low, so it's hard to go through the order several times, I think, if they're making contact against him. So really, you just got to find some more guys. And this past weekend, it was Brayton Thomas and Pete Haas, who have been great out of the pen recently, but they need more arms to come out and pitch consistently. I'll bring it over to the offense a little bit more. They're averaging 7 walks per game. That's an incredible number. And if you look at the ratio on the season, they've struck out 121 times and they've walked 119 times as a collective group. And then if you look at specific players, this is where I'll finish off here. Andrew Wiggins has been incredible in that leadoff spot. He hit 429 in his last 5 games. And then you look at the young guns, Cooper Malamazian, Big Ten Freshman of the Week with 5 doubles, and Jake Hanley as well, 5 for 12 on the weekend with 2 doubles. So the offense is swinging it. I'll pass it on to somebody else. What could be the problem?
I mean, a blind man can see what the issue is. You know, we're not getting enough pitching past our starters. You know, and it's just a battle within the team, I feel like. It's like we score, then we give it up. It's like we're playing against each other in some way when it gets past a certain inning. But even with that, you know, with all the Chicken Little that was happening all weekend long, and we were tied 3-3 in the 7th to win the series, but we couldn't execute, and that's where the walks came in. You know, Carl said it in our group chat right away, you know, how many, I think it was 7 walks in the last 3 innings, and these are by trusted guys. Mm-hmm. So if our you know, the guys you want, plus, I mean, there's definitely some guys missing, like, you know, Vogel, I haven't seen DeCapetti. You know, these are guys that we thought were going to be out there and that would have been pitching well. So obviously there's something going on there. We can only go with who we have, right? But 7 walks from the, like, we had it lined up right this time. We really did. And it just didn't work out. I think we're just in a rut pitching-wise, whether it's execution, the hit-by-pitches, the walks. Carl mentioned base running. You know, how many you know, 4 or 5 out innings can you deal with?
Right.
It doesn't matter how many runs you score.
Yep.
Well, going to that, particularly with walks and errors, to start the season, first couple of weeks, the team was averaging between 3 and 4 walks a game. The pitching staff was given up 3 to 4 walks a game, which if the pitching staff gives up 3 to 4 a game, I am perfectly happy with that. You're not going to do significant damage if you're only drawing 3 walks a game. Last week, it was 5.5 per game. This week, it was an average of 6 per game. That number just keeps going up, and we want it to do the opposite. We don't want it to go up there. And at the same time, in week 1 and 2, gave up fewer than, I know this is going to sound weird, but it's stats speak, but gave up fewer than half an unearned run a game. Like, it was not particularly significant. Last week, it was 1.2 runs. This week, it was 1.5 unearned runs. And while the differentials were generally larger than that, it seems like these unearned runs are coming at pivotal times, at, I hate to say it, but make or break times.
But I think also part of it, and I think you make a really good observation there, Cass, is a lot of these are coming late in games, mm-hmm. when it is the relievers who are being inconsistent and they are struggling to get outs. They have an out in their hands and it slips away.
Yeah.
And then that just the mental toll that's taking versus, you know, when the starting pitcher makes a slightly bad throw to first base. Honestly, I don't lose sleep over that.
Right. As long as there's not a runner on third, it's fine.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's not great, but at the same time, you know what? That starting pitcher isn't going to go, oh, they're not, you know, it's, yeah, I made a mistake. It's like walking a guy. I pick it up and go to the next one. But when it happens late in games, mm-hmm. to a pitcher that's struggling, then you see the snowball. So the unearned runs are a lot of them coming from, well, it would have been the third out. So any run given up right. after that, even if it's by giving up a 3-run homer or a bases clearing double or whatever it happens to be. And it's just a lot of these things are feeding on each other.
Right.
Same well, thing as when, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say further evidence to that is, the fact that the number of errors has not significantly changed between 1 and 1.5 errors a game
yeah.
on average week to week. But the number of unearned runs has gone up.
Yeah. Well, and we know this from a situational perspective. And there are stats out there, and it was interesting because Gabe Levy put this out like a year ago. On GitHub, and I actually downloaded it in Python and ran the numbers that talks about the various stages as to when, what scenario. So when you have a runner on first with 2 outs, what is the expected runs? Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is you can do math that'll determine, okay, does allowing a base runner in this scenario, what does that cost you in runs? And obviously the worst is the bases are loaded and you walk a guy. That's going to 100% cost a run.
Right.
But if the bases are empty and there's 2 outs, giving up a base runner is statistically significantly less costly than in any other scenario.
Right.
So what those scenarios are, whether it be errors, walks, whatever, can impact that. Now, I guess the thing I've also seen lately is a lack of execution. And I'm not just talking about hits, because I know we hear about that a lot. What is their batting average with runners in scoring position? But the inability to even get a productive out when there's a runner on third and less than 2 outs.
Yep.
That has been very frustrating. And again, I don't know. Is it that the opposite team is just doing a better job pitching to pop-ups and strikeouts? Or... if someone has a good thought on that, let me know.
Yeah, and looking at that, because actually the team has, as a whole, I don't have this broken out by weeks, but as a whole, they're with those situations of runner on third and fewer than two outs, productive 72% of the time, which is one of the better numbers I've seen with this team.
Because it does not seem that way.
No, but it...
I mean, I can... Just in the last game, I can think of three times when somebody struck out. Now, a lot of times they'll come through once there's two outs. Someone will come through and get a hit and make it.
Right.
But, okay, maybe.
But for example...
Maybe I'm just wrong. Like just need to dig into it more.
Well, and this week was particularly bad.
Okay.
But, like, Mount St. Mary's... the last game was six hits and seven at bats, or what was it? Seven productive in eight total appearances.
So I think is what we're saying then is that they are executing when it gets to the point at which they're at the lower end of the other team's bullpen.
Right.
And that's when they're scoring.
We're up by six.
Right.
Yeah.
And when we had first and second and nobody out, you know, and we needed in a tie game, it was pop up, strike up, strike up.
Yeah. Well, it was, well, in particular,
it's not going to work. Not going to work at all.
Well, in particular, that second Penn State game is a great example.
Yeah, drag where, Barton to walk.
There were five at bats with a runner on third and fewer than two outs. There were no hits. There were nine total plate appearances with a runner on third and fewer than two outs, and seven of them were productive.
Okay.
Because it was just a butt ton of RBI ground out, sack fly.
Yeah.
I think there was an RBI fielder's choice in there somewhere. But as a whole, very low batting average, runners on third, fewer than two outs, but very high productive rate.
Okay. Well, then I will stop complaining because that was...
look at first and second and nobody out.
Yeah.
Okay. Look what that's supposed to produce and look what we've produced in that.
Yeah.
I can think of 10, 15 times the first two guys get on and we haven't scored.
Yes.
And that's got to be in a 90 percentile that you're supposed to score.
Yeah.
And I could think of so many times this year because every time I do it, I put the thing out. Okay, first and second, nobody out. Here's up. This is going to happen. And it's happened so many times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, just because it's just third and two outs and first and second, it's just we're not – like, look what happened to Penn State, right? Yeah. Every time we walk the guy scored.
Yeah.
Every time they get a couple of walks, there's three sack flies later, they got two runs.
Yeah. We're not there's doing that. Yeah, ground ball to the right side. Bunt him to third, sack fly.
I think we did that once this year. I remember writing that we like produced a run one time that I remember in a big situation. When it's 10-1, who cares anyway?
Right.
But when these games have been close, we haven't executed. That's why you could be plus 37 and be 7-9.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And it feels like this has been a little bit of a broken record the last couple of years of dealing with these situational issues. Like, the offense is dominant as a whole, but then just struggle.
Yeah, but you can spin that, just like we said last week. You can spin anything you want.
Right.
And you can pad your stats and blow out games, and so are other teams.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And we're seeing a lot of this on social, and I'm actually going to take this opportunity because I see a lot of this from people that especially are just seeing the scores and then looking at the stats. That part of this is a lot of what we're seeing is happening in college baseball broadly.
Mm-hmm.
The game has gotten so much more offensive. And the thing is, when did that switch flip? Because it's the whole country I'm talking about. It flipped when Dustin Glant became the pitching coach at IU.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is like, well, look at the ERA before and the ERA after. And I'm not saying it's great, but a good chunk of that difference is a national trend. It's not that Indiana got twice as bad at pitching all of a sudden. That's not what happened. It's that, well, there's, I can't say for sure what happened, but a lot of people will say that the ball's juiced. That's number one. I don't know if that's true or not, but there's a lot of people that will claim that. I think the draft has pulled a lot more pitching talent out of college and is pulling less hitting talent out of college. And the extra eligibility and COVID rules have built up a lot of eligibilities. And I know we're somewhat past that, but I think between JUCOs and a lot of other things, you're just ending up with a lot of guys with who have been seasoned as hitters. I mean, we're seeing this every one of these mid-major teams we face. The lineup is almost entirely 4 and 5 year guys. Just
22-year-olds.
yeah, you just got all of these experienced hitters, and these guys are it are the pitchers are when they throw a strike, it's just getting hammered.
Well, not kind of going along with that, it also times out well to more widespread access to analytics.
Yeah, and I
And
think that has
that can.
helped. And at the college level, that's helped hitting a lot more than it's helped pitching. Because in the end, what is it going to help pitching? Well, in pitching, it's only going to help you if you can locate to a quadrant of the zone. And they're just with the kind of velocities and spin rates they're trying to throw,
You're not gonna
most of
have the
these guys aren't
command.
that accurate. But with hitting, hey, you can dial the pitching machine up to be exactly who this guy is, and you can watch his curveball 100 times before you actually face him.
That's true.
This is specifically in the midweek games as well. There's a big drop off for these main teams, at least like Power Four, Power Five teams. Indiana's not rolling out one of their starters during the midweek. You're using guys that are pitching an inning to two each. Not you're using 7 guys in a game. They're not all going to give you a scoreless frame. They're just not. And Carl, I remember seeing you sent out something on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. That night, UCF scored 13 on Florida. That was that, I think that was the night Indiana had let up double digit runs. Like Tennessee let up 9 to Radford. It was a one run game this past week. It happens. It's college baseball. I'm looking now at Ohio State, who were playing this weekend. Like they're letting up 12 runs and losing. They let up 10 runs to Valparaiso. Like this is it's this happens. This is happening in college baseball, and it's unfortunate that they're losing to these teams that I guess you can call them inferior opponents, but they have talent at the plate, and if you're not using your best guys, you can't always win them.
Well, and there's no question. You look at, Northern Kentucky. Those guys can hit. That wasn't, oh, some these were this was an old squad of guys that have been tearing it up. Their only issue is, like Indiana, their pitching depth. And the thing is, you're always going to have opportunities where sometimes you're going to get pitchers that will execute, that will find it on a particular day. And they were able to get just enough of that. They still gave up 11 runs, but they were able to get just enough of that to win the game. When things went really, really bad, and as that phrase that the coach used when a grenade went off on the mound. So,
That's a grenade, those grenade innings, right? I remember the first weekend of the season, I remember thinking, okay, we gave up those 4 runs in the first inning, right? It was like arrow walk, whatever, grand slam. I'm like, whoa.
Well, it was
And
no, it was
then,
it was all ground balls. It was all ground ball singles.
like C&I singles, right? That's what it was. And there was like a tricky ball to right field. We weren't sure who would catch it. I remember that. So that is your 4 run inning, right? And then he pitched well the rest of the game. But I remember going through the first few games and I was like, oh, there's another 4 run inning for the other team. There's another 4 run inning for the other team. I don't remember us giving those up so much in the past. Like just this weekend, I looked it up. We had a 6 run inning we gave up in the third, a 7 run inning in the fourth to one game, 4 running in the eighth. That's all Penn State. And then we gave up 5 runs in the fourth to the Norse. And those are bomb innings. Forget about grenade. I mean, those are so hard to come back from, and especially on a midweek where you're not going to break out your big arms to shut them down. No.
Well, and you don't have even a guy that's like, okay, that we're going to come to get 2 outs that we can rely on to get 2 outs. That's going to come in and just, shut down an inning, and then he's going to go back to the pen. there's just right now, there's no one in that type of role. You're always seeing hope because they're rolling out more guys. It was actually very good to see Matt Bonnert have a little bit of success this weekend, because that's a guy they've been talking about, a guy very experienced who had been a closer and it's
Well,
very
last year they
successful.
were thinking for the weekend, right? Last year before he got
Yeah.
hurt.
I mean, it's just, he's every one of these guys reacts differently to, to coming back from injury. And they said they're shocked that Ben Grable is at the point at which he's a genuine starter, because he had surgery 12 months ago. Now, Bonnert's been longer, but again, it's just every guy deals with this differently, and none of these surgeries are 100%. I mean, there's going to be guys that
You're
just,
talking about Tommy John surgery.
yeah, none of these guys are going, I mean, every one of them is not going to come back. Yes, the surgery has gotten better, it's gotten more successful, but you got to then throw, you got to be on the right regimen, you got to be able to come back and do what you did before, and not everyone can do that, and that's it happens. It's, I mean, what these guys do is amazing to begin with. It's like you're over 60 feet away throwing a small ball at a target that's 18 inches wide, and you're trying to throw it at least 80 miles per hour.
With some amount of spin.
Yeah, and that's right. And if you don't provide any movement on it, you're gonna get killed. So
Just got to execute better late in these games on the mound. It's really what it is. We had two more this week with the Charlie Brown pulling the football away. When it was 9-8, when Wiggins hit that home run, I thought for sure we were going to catch him, pass him, right? And then we were up when we tie it 3-3 in the seventh. I'm like, okay, it's settled. Let's just win this one in the end. We lose by like 10. You wouldn't even thought that game was close. That was series on the line with nine outs to go, and you would have thought we got killed on Sunday, but we didn't. So it just comes down to, late in the games, we got to pitch better and play better defense. We're scoring runs. Even with these innings where we go first and second and then don't score.
And to that point, this was statistically, as far as batting average, this was the best weekend of the season. The team hit 367 on the weekend. The bats are there.
We'll have to see what happens. I mean,
To
we gotta
round
pitch
this
better.
out, I think the next 2 weeks are the biggest weekends of the whole season. They're at 121 in the RPI, which really isn't terrible, especially for a 7-9 record. They have Indiana State, who's at 148, and then Ohio State, who's 4-9 on the season, and they're at 180. Ohio State, the only game I saw that they played this year, they're up 10-0 to Alabama and lost that game.
And
So,
so the end of that too. Oh, that's a
and
killer.
then there's Evansville, who's 5-9, and then you look ahead to the West Coast teams, two of the best teams in the Big Ten, with UCLA, who's at 9 in the RPI. That's a huge series on the road, and then USC comes into town. So these next 2 weeks, I don't want to be this guy, but it's do or die. They got to win these next 2 weeks, or this season, it's going to be trouble.
Yeah, to Mercer's credit, though, the last, what, 2 years? We lost the first Big Ten series, won the next few.
But also keep in mind, we're 3 weeks earlier, or 2 weeks earlier, and what concerns me is just the way the month of March went last year. And right now the pattern is the same. Pitched it pretty well in week one. Granted, they didn't win, but at least the team pitched it relatively well, to Cass's point, in week one. Not a lot of free bases. And those issues started to creep up again once March rolled around, and we're seeing that same pattern. And I don't know if that means anything. It may just be coincidental. But to Zach's point, that yeah, they've got to make it to where it doesn't turn into the March that happened last year, because last year turned out to be not a huge deal because there wasn't a lot of Big Ten in March. Well, now
Now there is.
there's
Well, and
all
act
Big Ten, and it's every weekend is Big Ten in March. So,
well, and actually, that could be an explanatory factor. outside of midweeks, February is exclusively on the road. March is largely on the road, particularly before Big Ten expansion. So I'm wondering if there's something about colder weather making it harder to grip the ball, to have the same command on the pitches. And maybe that would make a little bit of sense as to why February starts out pretty solid, March gets questionable, and then it cleans up for the latter part of the season once it starts warming up again.
Well, they better pitch really well tomorrow because it's going to be gorgeous.
Yay!
We got to drive Cassis Point home tomorrow, boys.
Yes. Yep.
All right. Well, even, I guess, as we always say, even in weeks like this, we've got hardware to hand out. And said the Big Ten already handed out their hardware, as Zach mentioned, yeah. Cooper Malamazzi and Big Ten Freshman of the Week. Chris, who is getting red belts for this week?
Well, the Big Ten only gave Malamazzi and Freshman Player of the Week. I'm going to give him two awards. He's going to get the hitting award. He's going to get the Alex Dickerson Award for the four doubles. Sets a record. You guys know who was the last one to hit three doubles?
Alex Dickerson?
No, which would have been very cool.
Yeah.
Would have been very cool. He's actually the answer to another question from a few weeks
ago. I'm going to say Paul Tates.
No.
Okay.
Philip Glasser.
He had a lot of doubles. He has he has the team doubles record for a single season. So
mm-hmm. Yeah,
Big Ten play.
He could hit that ball high. He definitely could. Philip Glasser, March 15th, 2002 is the last time somebody had three doubles. And that was actually the game, and it will be the last game, where Kentucky will play at the Park. So we kicked Kentucky's ass. Then the coach was afraid to ever play this back and forth home and home again. So that's the exact game that that happened. But now Cooper Malamazian has the new record. Now, this is a record that's going to be hard to beat. You got to hit five doubles to beat this record. Like, you could hit four, you just tie it. So this is a pretty – I mean, I remember that guy's name with the back-to-back no-hitters. Like, you got to throw three no-hitters to break that record. That's insane.
Yeah.
But you'd have to hit five doubles to beat young Cooper's record. That's pretty awesome. And then defensively, he gets it as well, because actually he played a great third base. Whether it was the foul ball territory, making catches, leaving his feet, being able to come in on balls. So Cooper Malamazian gets the Tony Butler Award and the Alex Dickerson Award. And then for the Joey Donato Award, Zach did a great job really touching on Ben Grable. He pointed out the exact stats I was going to, we're talking back-to-back five-inning performances, just the one run. He's got 10 strikeouts in the 10 innings combined. And I know, some of these old guys like me, you hear five innings, you go, oh, it was only five innings. Not too many guys throw five innings anymore, folks. Five, six innings performance is a big deal, man. And he did it back-to-back. I can't remember the last time we've had that. And I mean, that's something I wish I would have looked up. The last time a starter went back-to-back five innings and only gave up a run. It's probably been years for the staff, for our team. So big shout out to Ben Grable. He'll get the Joey Donato Pitching Award. As far as some pro highlights, our guy Kyle Schwarber finally got off the schneid. He got his first couple hits in the spring. He was 0 for something. I mean, they obviously don't care, but it was nice to see him get some hits. Another first performance of spring, Gabe Bierman took the field for Marlins. He got a strikeout. And there's this spring breakout showcase. I don't know if you guys heard about it. Some teams, handpicked some prospects. They're going to play in some tournament. And Brock Tibbetts, Connor Foley, and Craig Yoho are going to be in it. So that's pretty cool. We got some representation for IU for that. Tommy Sommer, who we talked about last week, his Germany team did lose in an elimination game against Brazil, but he really pitched well. It just seemed like, anytime they would take him out, then Brazil or I don't know where these other teams would start scoring runs. They didn't get him off Tommy. But, Germany will not be in the qualifying stages. The United States will be. So we can just root for the United States. We don't have to worry about, Tommy being there against Germany. So it might actually work out better. But so those are our red belts, and we got some pro highlights. And now we're going to get a little preview of the Buckeyes from Cass.
Yes, thank you, Chris. Buckeyes are going to be coming into Bloomington this weekend. The game times are slated for 6 p.m. Eastern on Friday, 2 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, and 1 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. However, there's more chance for weather. This time it appears to not be a cold issue. It's a wet issue. So particularly, I think that Saturday game is probably going to be a bit questionable. I would not be surprised to see a doubleheader, depending how stuff starts shaking out between now and then. I don't trust the forecast this far out, but for those of you attending, probably be aware of the forecast and be prepared to check for changes in schedule.
So are we possibly talking another Friday doubleheader?
I would not be surprised.
At least the pitching's set up for it, so.
Yes. For the Buckeyes, they are 4-9 on the season. Notably, they are 0-3 on the road in true road games. And as they were not part of the pick'em last week, this is their first Big Ten series of the season. They were swept by Arizona State in week one. They beat North Carolina State and lost to Coastal and Alabama in week two. They lost to all three, Auburn, Baylor, and Oregon State in week three. They have beat St. John's in a midweek, and they won 2 of 3 versus Valpo last week. They do play Eastern Michigan on Tuesday before the IU series. So any or all of these numbers could change between now and the series start. The Ohio State offense is, I'd say, solid, if not overwhelming, was the general idea I got off of them. They can score runs and score runs in a hurry. They're averaging about 8 a game, hitting .274 as a team. So not as solid as IU bats have been on the season, but not terrible by any stretch. Not huge power. They've got 18 home runs, so just over one per game. Enough that they can do it, but it's not the biggest threat. They actually don't walk a lot, 5 a game, compared to 8 strikeouts per game on the offensive side. They do have 3 guys who have qualifying at-bats who are hitting over .300. You've got Trey Lipsey, who's a senior right fielder. He's hitting .333 with a .530 on base percentage. Not a big power guy, but he is a stolen base threat. He is 7 for 7 on the season so far. Tyler Pettorini, he's a senior third baseman. He's hitting .321, 4 home runs, and above 1,000 OPS. And then Lee Ellis, who's a sophomore second baseman, he's hitting .313 with 5 home runs. And again, OPS of above 1,000. So they do have some guys with a little bit of pop, but by and large, again, it's that solid offense. If they're going to do damage, it's going to be death by 1,000 paper cuts. A whole bunch of those seeing eye singles strung together. On the pitching side, their staff struggles, as evidenced by that Alabama game we were talking about where they were up like 10-0 and lost. Yeah, pitching is why. As a staff, they have an 8.68 ERA, and they issue 7 walks per game to go with 7 strikeouts per game. And opponents are hitting damn near .300 off of them at .298. They've had a bit of inconsistency on Fridays. Short of either the regular Saturday or regular Sunday guy becoming the regular Friday guy, I don't know who's going to be pitching on Friday. The two starters we are very likely to see are Chase Harrell, who's a sophomore righty. He's been the Saturday guy every week. He's got a .327 ERA and 22 innings of work, but his batting average against is just .195. So given up some runs, but not as much by way of hits. The other pitcher would likely be Jake Michalak, who's also a sophomore right-handed pitcher who has pitched every Sunday. He's been roughed up a little bit, an 8.76 ERA in 12 and a third innings of work, 14 walks to 15 Ks. So he is walking, he's walking guys a fair bit. The probable guys who we will likely see either in relief or as that third starter, Nick Copenhaver, who's a redshirt freshman, righty again. He's got a 2.13 ERA in 12 and two-thirds innings of work spread over seven games. And the other one is Hunter Shaw, who does have a 6-flat ERA in 12 innings of work, but he's got a whip of 0.92. So things are going real pear-shaped there for him if he's giving up fewer than one walk and hit per inning and his ERA is 6. Not really sure how that's happened, but he's a guy that they've leaned on more than most others. So overall, I would expect a bit of a slugfest with IU bats probably coming out on top. But I would expect lots of runs again. So we'll see how that goes.
I'm particularly encouraged by the lack of a left-handed starting pitcher.
Yes, yes. Although if I didn't mention it, Hunter Shaw, that last one, the one with the 6-flat ERA with a 0.92 whip, he is a lefty.
Okay.
He's the only lefty who stood out as I could say fairly definitively, we will probably see him unless they start him.
We'll see in midweek. We'll see every lefty that's on. They will unload a whole series. You're not going to not see a lefty unless he just can't throw strikes. So
yes, that
and even then, as long as he can throw a slider, he's probably going to be in there.
Yes, that's why at this point I'm picking any lefties who have any significant innings. But before we get to Ohio State this weekend, the Hoosiers are going to head to Terre Haute tomorrow, and Carl's going to be there. What
yes,
we
yes.
expect?
I'm going to be on the highway to paradise. yeah. Yeah, my wife did not think that was funny. So
tell her to go watch Paradise. Oh no, there's a good plug. That's a good show, folks. If you're not watching it, Paradise Hulu. We'll cover up Carl's joke with that.
Okay. Well, Indiana State is not quite the team they've been the past 2 years, where they were. 2 years ago, they were a super regional team. They were a very good regional team last year. Obviously, had a change in coach. They got the coach from Southern Indiana, which obviously was a hugely improved program. So I think this is a program that's going in the right direction, but you kind of have to look at this as sort of a rebuilding year for them. Obviously, a lot of transfers because so many players like, Cole Gilley transferred out of Indiana State when the coach left. So they had to fill a lot of those holes with transfers. Nothing is really – they're not a hugely offensive team. They've got two guys that have an OPS over two older guys that have an OPS over 1,000, and that's Carlos Pena and Keegan Garris. So those are the big bats to look out for. I tried to get an eye on what I think pitching will be like who they're going to throw, but it's really hard. They had a tough four-game series against Southeast Missouri this past week that they split. They won the first two games, lost the second two games, and pretty much everybody that they threw in the Purdue midweek last week threw either Saturday or Sunday. So I don't know how available those guys are going to be to pitch tomorrow. So it's really tough for me to even say what the pitching is going to look like. But it should be an advantage to the Hoosiers just because most likely, they're going to have to dig up freshmen and whoever probably didn't travel to that SEMO trip to be able to throw against Indiana. So Indiana needs to jump on whoever they throw out and score a lot of runs. It's going to be warm. I'm not sure about the wind, but it's going to be warm. So this is an opportunity for the bats to do well. The Hoosiers are starting Darren Swanson, who we haven't seen a ton of yet. So that'll be interesting to see what Swanson can do. And a lot of guys, had 1-2 inning outings this weekend. I would just expect a lot of Hoosiers to see the mound. And then the hope is that, they can throw clean innings and not have the, three guys have to pitch in one inning and give up 7 runs type situation. Because although it's not dominant numbers, Indiana State can still hit. I mean, this is still a competent baseball team that's playing at home. They did get run ruled by Purdue last week, but they still scored 4 runs. I think it was 14-4 was the run rule. But I think the Hoosiers want to score double digit runs and keep the Trees bats at bay as much as possible to come out of Terre Haute with their first midweek win. Get it on the road. So I suppose now we get to go to what has become my favorite topic in all of this, and I've lost it, which is the Big Ten pick'em, which did not go well for me personally last week. That's for sure. Last week, Chris breaks out with the lead at 5-1. Have you ever had the lead in Big Ten pick'em, Chris?
I've never been out of, no, I was in third. I was in
Okay.
third once. I have never been higher than third in any week, in any ranking, in any season. This is my high point of ever.
Of ever.
Yes.
Josh is in second at 4-2. Cass and Zach split the week at 3-3. And thank goodness for Iowa, I did win one series this week. Yeah, that did not go well. I went 1-5.
I don't think I've ever said thank goodness for Iowa in the scheme of baseball, college baseball.
I have never said it in any context whatsoever. Whether it's women's basketball, whether it's 5 hours driving through the middle of the state, no matter what, I've never actually said that. Lots of corn, lots of corn when you drive through it, just flat corn. I know people say there's aspects of that in Indiana, but at least we have rolling hills, at least in our part of
In
the
the
state.
southern
So,
part, yeah. Not
you
the
always see me
northern part.
driving in the
It's
rain
flat.
too, Carl. Remember how much rain you caught for that? The Big Ten tournament. Oof.
So then, yeah. So that's where that's how we started. There's actually more buys this week. So there's only 5 series to
Okay.
choose from this week. And thanks to some weird technical issues I've been having, Cass is going to be the one to announce the matchups. Well, I try to quickly type them out. So.
Yes. So we've got USC going over to Michigan, Penn State going to Northwestern, Michigan State going to Iowa, Minnesota going over to Oregon, and Nebraska heading to UCLA.
Zach, you got your picks ready?
Yeah, I think
Why
so.
don't you lead us off while Carr's doing his math over there? I want to give him a minute. He didn't even, I don't even think he knew the
My
matchups.
pick, I made my pick. This is easier than last week. I mean, really,
Okay.
last week it felt like,
Lots of
well, I mean, it
50-50.
should. Chris and I literally picked all 6 series opposite. My one win was Chris's one loss.
Yeah, I'm just looking at this quickly. I have not. Is on the spot. I'm going to take all three West Coast teams. That's UCLA at
Ooh.
home, Oregon at home. I think it's tough to go out west and win a series there. So UCLA and Oregon for sure. I'll give you USC at Michigan And then the other two take Iowa at home against Michigan State. And then I think this Penn State team is really solid. They're going to go to Northwestern and win. So that's Penn State, Iowa, and then the three West Coast teams, USC, UCLA, and Oregon.
Nice. I got Michigan, okay, Northwestern, because I'm mad at Penn State just because they beat us. And I'm really, and honestly, it was a very close series. People acting like this series was just like ridiculous. You kicked our ass, we kicked yours, we were tied in the seventh inning. I mean, that's what that was. And then we blew it. So I will own the blowing it apart. But it's not like this was some kind of woodshed thing. We just blew it in the last few innings of the third game. Let's see, I've got Oregon, UCLA, and what does that leave? Michigan State?
Yep, at Iowa.
I'm doing Michigan State. I'm mad at Iowa for ruining my perfect six.
All right, Cass, go ahead.
Mine is actually very similar to Chris. I've got Michigan, home field advantage there. While I don't know that Penn State is that solid, I feel they are more solid than Northwestern. So Penn State, Michigan State at Iowa, and then Oregon and UCLA. Again, it's going to be hard for anybody to go out west and win. So,
All right, Josh is taking Penn State, Michigan State, Michigan, UCLA, and Oregon. I have four of my picks done. I'm looking at the last one now.
you can't mess the Purdue game up this time.
I have that advantage, yes. Okay.
Yes, I'm gonna say
So
it'll help you.
I was gonna make my decision on USC and Michigan based on the weather in Ann Arbor.
Oh.
And it's gonna be nice weather in Ann Arbor, so I'm picking USC. Yeah, so if it's gonna be like in the mid-30s, I was gonna lean towards Michigan.
And the
But
California,
where does it say?
Southern
50?
California
It's
guys,
gonna be
not
70 on Saturday
so it's
in Ann
gonna be
Arbor.
their weather.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, they're bringing the California weather with them. So
Yes.
USC, I'm taking Penn State over Northwestern. I think Northwestern's going in the right direction, but I don't think they're there yet. I'm probably gonna get burned for this, but I'm hearing good things on the Michigan State bandwagon, so I will go ahead and jump that. I'm sure I'm wrong. Yeah, I'm not going against Oregon again. That was just plain dumb on my part.
He
Yeah.
was zagging, he said. You
I don't know what I was doing, but
did
that
zag.
yeah, that was not smart. And yeah, I'm not sold on Nebraska. Well, I think Nebraska's reeling. I mean, they lost their ace pitcher to injury, so and I completely forgot about that before making last week's pick. So yeah, I'm not gonna go down there again. And UCLA is playing very, very good baseball. So like Zach, I'm taking all of the Pacific Coast teams at this point. Well, that will do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. So I do want to thank our panel here, Cassidy Palmer, Zach Horwitz, and Chris Feeney. We did have a reminder for you. If you got Flow College subscription for the opening weekend of the season, take a moment right now, if you're not planning to keep it for other reasons, to cancel that, because you will be charged for another month soon if you did get that subscription. Oh, and speaking of TV, the game, because I am going to put this out tonight, so you might be listening to this. If it's, assume you're listening to this on Tuesday morning, tonight's game at Indiana State will be on ESPN Plus. So if you have ESPN Plus, you will be able to watch that game there, and obviously the Big Ten Plus will be covering the series at the BART this weekend. So, but we also, for those of you in the Bloomington area, we hope to see you at the BART. For those of you close or more westerly, we might see you at Bob Warren Field tomorrow night. I will be there, so it will hopefully be an entertaining evening of baseball. The weather is going to be fantastic, so it's a good opportunity. And it's a nice field to go watch a game at. So Again, thank you to all of our listeners. We've even had some positive feedback lately, which is always good to hear. And we know it's tough. It's tough when the team isn't playing the way you would want them to. But hey, there's always more baseball. There's always a new game. There's lots of games. We'll look at it one game at a time and enjoy what this team is capable of doing. And at the very least, my goodness, they can hit. So let's enjoy that while we've got that. So
take the over.
So that will do it. And we'll be at it once again next week. And this weekend, opening up the home part of Big Ten, we will see you at the BART.